So today I've got, all the way from Sydney, Mr. Ian Baker, maybe known as Mr. World Time Attack to a lot of you, but if you haven't met him, this man's done a hell of a thing for motorsport in Australia and globally. Ian, welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Mate, bloody good to have you here. Really appreciate you taking the time. And also, I've had to do something today because there was another event going on last night, and I don't want to rub it in or anything, but it's been quite a day for
yeah,
Queensland.
I forgot where you come from. Yeah, it's probably a bad day for us, really, isn't it? Yeah.
So for anybody listening around the world, there is a little game of football where our two states, Queensland and New South Wales, have a little showdown, and we all get fairly excited about it. Mm. And the main reason we get excited about it is we can joust with our friends in other states. And right now we're ramming it right up the nose of our friends in New South Wales.
We're not doing so well this year, let's put it that way.
So I'm enjoying a Milton Mango while we have this discussion to just gently rub that in. But Ian, for people that have no idea who you are and potentially live under a rock, mate, do you want to tell me a little bit about who you are and why on earth you started One Perfect Lap? Let's go back in time.
So we took a car, a Queensland-based car, to Japan to race at Tsukuba in 2007. And that was – so it was a guy named Mark Berry. We sponsored the car through my other company, High Octane Racing, sort of helped put it all together, and we're the first Australian car to go over there. At the time, that whole Japanese tuning scene was probably at its peak of the, you know, mid to late 2000s. All the pro cars in Japan, like Cyber Evo, HKS, the MSB GDR, all these really cool cars. So we went over there. It was just, anyone that was into that sort of scene would just be walking around going, man, this is like so cool. So I was like, we're gonna bring this back to Australia, you know? So I'd never even really run a track day, and I just decided to bring it, we did a national event first called Superlap, which we run at Oran Park. And Mark Berry said to me as he was leaving that, he said, if you start that national event, I'll build an R34. So that's what really kicked it off. And then in 2009, Oran Park shut. And I knew for a fact that we wouldn't have enough revenue coming in with the model I had. So I just thought, well, let's go and try and turn it into a world-scale event. And I pitched it to Yokohama Tire, and they said, you're probably on drugs and it's never going to work. So I said, look, I went and seen the boss then, a guy named Steve Clifford, and had said, you pay for the marketing manager to come to Japan with me. He was a car nut, Christian. He's still involved. He manages my stage now, so no one ever leaves, right? He's left Yokohama years ago, but he still works at World Time Attack, right? But back in those days, I said, you know, can we let's go and have a look in Japan. We'll go to America. So I drove around with a one-page document written in half-baked Japanese saying, come to this event that doesn't even exist. And we managed to talk Panspeed into coming. And Tomei, I think, from memory. And then we went to America and went to the Superlap battle, went to SEMA show, walked around the Superlap battle and basically tried to sell the same thing. And I got Sierra. That guy was like a billionaire, and there was no way you were going to sell him with money. So it was a case of I just said to him, hey, you know, if you win today, I'm going to ship your car to Australia to the world-scale event. He was like, I'll hold you to that, you know. So we did, and he did, and that's how we kicked it off, basically, and it's just snowballed from there, really. And we've had ups and downs, but we've just never given up, really, and just kept pushing on with it. It's very difficult to make something that's world compliant. Like the FIA are able to do it because of how big they are, and you know they basically build a set of rules for Le Mans, and everyone just builds to that because they're the FIA. But for a little bloke down in Australia, and everyone's got their own Time Attack set of rules wherever they come from, it's a lot more tricky to make it all comply. But yeah, we've somehow over the years managed to keep it going and build it upon what we started.
It's bloody wild. And honestly, this the scale of what you've built is phenomenal. And for people listening that may have never heard of the concept of a time attack, do you want to just explain how a time attack event works?
Yeah, so it's basically you're racing against the clock rather than racing against other competitors. So it's basically, as we've always had the moniker, one perfect lap, you know. Yes. So it allows the big attraction that I think from an outsider looking in is that, you know, and I can watch on people's faces that they've been in the garage, you know, and this guy's there and he's Toyota AE86 or whatever that he's just built in his garage at home, and he looks over and in the next garage is Shane Van Gisbergen driving Murray Coote's car, and in the one next door is Nob Taniguchi, he's probably only ever seen on the internet. So the aspirational side of it is probably on another level to most other forms of motorsport.
And interestingly, I've got to reflect back because I was at your first event, mate. I worked with the Australian distributor of Motul back then.
Yep.
So I don't know if you remember that far back, but, yeah, we chatted in those earliest of days.
Yep.
And, mate, this was something that I thought was really interesting was I was an up-and-coming photographer.
Yep.
And I reached out to you and I said, look, I write for this little thing overseas. And I was actually able to be granted media accreditation.
Yep.
Where that would quite often be very difficult for other events. And I've found that you've had a really wonderful approach to media over the years, and I think that that's really helped.
Look, we have had to rein that in. Compared, like, obviously, like, we'll get probably north of 150 media requests, particularly as you know, your average phone now can take a photograph better than what the SLR could 15 years ago.
That's for sure.
So everyone's suddenly a photographer, and everyone's building an Instagram account and puts a thing at whatever media, and suddenly they're, you know, they think they're entitled. So as much as we try to help everyone, you can't have that many media there. And
no way.
But the good thing is with Sydney Motorsport Park, you can virtually get into everywhere anyway. So it's only a few spots. And we are, you know, I've always had the approach that when you buy the ticket at the front gate, you know, you should be able to get access to virtually everything. And we've never put extra charges to get into paddocks or anything. So when you come along, you can see everything, you know, and we make that right across to, you know, to the International Drifting Cup at night. If you buy a ticket in the morning, you can stay for the evening and you get another whole show. And it's not only another show, it's another professional level show. You know, like, I think drifting in Australia is very underrated. It's been sort of gone in different directions over the years, and there's been some disparity and whatever. But when you see professional level stuff with all the pro guys, it really is a show, you know.
Mate, those blokes send it like nothing I've ever seen.
Yeah,
and that and how you can sit on the hill there and you can park your car and
all of that. Yeah,
mate, it's a hell of a thing.
Yeah,
what I find really fascinating is that. So had you done any events work before this, before sort of Super Lap?
Never.
Because tell me about your background, because I know that you're like, if I've read up correctly, mate, you've done car building and bike building and like all sorts of mad stuff.
Well, I was actually a fabricator originally, a race fabricator, and I had a company called Performance Metalcraft back in the 90s, and we did stuff like I actually did all the development work on the Mazda SPs. We built a lot of intercoolers back in the early days with, you know, I was sort of, we were pioneering all that stuff back when Rocky Raham from Pack Performance and Maztec of Melbourne and all that stuff. It was all in its infancy, and we did a lot of pioneering and that sort of stuff. So I've been in the game a long time, but in terms of event stuff, no, never.
So you were deep into it, because that's the thing. There's some names there that you're bringing up, like Pack Performance and stuff. Yeah. Like, mate, those guys were absolute kings, particularly in those early days.
Well, back in those days, Rocky was working out of his backyard, believe it or not.
Was he really? So that was like before the shop and before everything. Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, the fastest street registered drag car probably did 9 seconds, where now 9 seconds, you can change the turbo and intercooler on a Barra and it'll probably do that, you know. So it was certainly a different world back in those days, that's for sure.
Mate, it's hard to explain to people that, you know, 7 seconds was considered a quick 0 to 100.
Insane, yeah. So, yeah, it has moved a lot. But it's the same as what we're doing. You know, like back, if you go back to 2010, our club sprint class guys this year will be doing virtually what the pro guys did in 2010. And that's
ridiculous.
Right? So, and they're doing that on a complete and utter street tire. With very limited aero. So it pretty much is. It will be around that time this year. If I believe what I'm hearing and what the test times are showing, will be very close to what the Cyber Evo did in 2010. And what you'll find is that the open class this year, which is a limited aero, no flat floors, more limited weight as well, they're going to be doing virtually what Nemo did in 2012, you know, so.
And see, there's a story too, isn't it? Mate, yeah. That car, I got to see that one up close when it was being developed, and that was unlike anything I've ever seen. And again, it's what you guys have brought to motorsport and motorsport development, I think, cannot be underappreciated.
Yeah, that's probably true in saying that. But a lot of that is really caused by, you know, the way that so much of it's blocked in terms of keeping parity with things and, you know, and no freedom of regulation, that they have to, and a lot of it too, like, for example, what happened with the V8 supercars, just when they're talking about those front, the front knuckles and so on, you know, that comes down to whoever's got the most money that can spend the money on development of front knuckle, where we've sort of said, well, you know, you've got a pretty free rein as long as it's safe and as long as we make the safety sell, and that's something that we've worked on with Motorsport Australia the whole way through about every year, you know, maintaining the safety and keeping everything, you know, if it does go pear-shaped, we want to make sure that our guys walk away because, you know, I mean, these guys are my mates too. They're not just, you know, we've grown a relationship over the years that, you know, Bart's one of my mates, you know, Tim Slade, all those guys are my friends. I've known Tim since 8 years old. So, you know, the last thing I want is anything to go wrong. So safety is paramount, but when it comes to everything else, you know, like, hey, go nuts.
Because you've managed to break the classes now so that there's separation amongst these, so that there is a capacity, because obviously we're talking here about, you know, the absolute fastest. But there's a capacity for people to come in as well that are probably more, you know, we say backyarders, but privateers.
Yep. Absolutely. And, you know, like people say, oh, there's not, you know, there's not that many pro cars anymore. Well, there is actually, but they're mostly in pro-am now because they're owner-driver, right? Yeah. If you look at any of the top class of anything anywhere in the world, if you go to Pikes Peak this weekend, there's probably only 2 or 3 cars that can win, you know. Anything like that is going to be that case, you know. It's very expensive and limited to what can run at the top. But, you know, overall, you know, holistically, we see the event as much bigger than that, you know. And you know, the outright lap record is probably going to fall this year. And there's two or three cars that would potentially take that this year. But the event as a whole is way bigger than that. You know, it's people come to see so much more than that. It's not, you know, that lap record, if they break it, great. But if they don't, it doesn't really matter. You know, like you're going to see so much cool shit. It's not funny. You know, it's there's like, for instance, we're bringing out Ryan Turk's Judd-powered V10 Supra. That's going to be a noise. We haven't heard something similar to that since we had the 767B year. I can't tell you yet, but we're going to put that up against something pretty cool that's going to blow everyone's mind. So watch this space on that one. But that car doesn't comply to any of our rule sets, so it's going to go, believe it or not, with the limited aero it's got, it wouldn't be as fast as you think, but my God, it'll make a noise coming down the straight. And Ryan's such a cool dude too, you know. I mean, he's a professional level drifter, but he's so excited about Time Attack now, you know, that's his new jam. So it's so cool to have him along, you know. And then we've got Mike Burrows in that Ferrari with the Honda K series engine, you know. That's something that people have frothed on over the, you know, on the internet. And he's such a down-to-earth dude, you know. He's like, you serious, you're going to bring me to Australia, man? I can't believe my eyes. So he's like coming, you know. And and then we've got Farras in the Corvette, you know, who's been broken every lap record around America. And so, you know, again, it's just every year it just steps up to the plate, and there's something for everyone, really, you know.
And that's what I've always seen is I've always enjoyed the range and the variety. I mean, I remember when you brought Mad Mike over the first time.
When he
had the quad rotor RX-7 as his primary vehicle.
Yeah.
And, mate, seeing that thing for the first time and watching that bad boy spit flames.
Yep.
Mate, that's one of the coolest things because this was stuff that, again, you, as you said, you'd only see it on the internet. You'd see photos and videos, but no chance would you get to see that in Australia.
One of the big things I've always said, and I drill it into all my staff, we're not in motorsport, we're in the entertainment business. So get on with it, you know, and, yeah, that's what we're about.
And that's something I've watched from you over these years, and it's something that I've really admired. The effort that you go to promote the event year round, like you do one event a year, but you are on it. And I watch you week in, week out, month in, month out, talking about it, communicating about it, releasing information, building the brand, building the excitement. Like, mate, it's a full-time job, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we've got a massive marketing team, you know, like there's two of them sitting over here and that's it. So it's just us, really. You know, don't get me wrong. When at the event, we bring in a whole heap of people, and I've managed to put together the A team these days, and I've got some of the best people in the business helping me do it. But on a weekly basis, yeah, you're right. I've got Dan Mackey manages all the drift guys. Me and Elaine work in pretty much on it full time. And Inga does all the financial stuff and tells me not to bring anything because we can't afford it.
Go, stop promipsing to send more people shipping containers. Yeah. Go, shipping container costs, have they come down yet?
They're up. But I've invested in a lot of infrastructure to get cars here cheaper. We've got stackers that we can rack cars on top of each other now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, all that costs money, but at the end of the day, you don't have any option but to do smart things these days.
Oh, mate, you do. But, you know, you've probably got to loop the Army and the Air Force in, you know, those big carriers.
Yeah.
Imagine that, mate. Yeah. Zip around the world, pick up a few things.
Look, I'll tell you, we're not over the whole COVID thing is not over with, as far as quarantine goes, just we've had to ship the cars a month earlier simply because of the quarantine delays Yeah, and no one knows about that, but it's all to do with it's not like we're bringing in containers, but you can't get offices because the roll on roll off down at Port Kembla, they're all coming in filthy dirty from China and wherever, and you know, and it's just delayed the whole thing, you know. So we've got to take precautions to make sure we get everything here, you know.
What a bloody nightmare! I don't think people would quite understand the logistics.
I don't think they would. I can assure you, they wouldn't. No.
Because, mate, what sort of crowds do you get? Because I know it's significant.
Well, on our biggest year yet, we've had 25,000.
Bloody hell.
But can I just tell you, our ticket sales this year are up 190% on any previous year. So I reckon, you know, weather permitting, our traffic management guy always says, you know, if you're the Rolling Stones or Formula One, you can be in a tornado and sell out. But if you're not, a lot of it's weather dependent, which I agree. So if we get good weather, which September is traditionally pretty good.
Pretty solid.
I would suspect we'll get upward of 30,000 this year, which will be the biggest event on the calendar by a fair margin at that event, at that venue.
Because I was going to say that, like, when you look at motorsport events in Australia, you'd have to be up near the pointy end.
Yes and no. To be fair, first of all, Bathurst, you can't compare anything to Bathurst 1000 is like IndyCar, like Indy 500 in America. That you know, people may not follow IndyCars or whatever, but Indy 500 is like the biggest spectator event in the world, you know. And Bathurst will get upwards of 200,000 people over the 5 days. So you can't really compare that to any other motorsport event, except maybe Formula One. But in terms of circuit-based events, I would imagine we would be right up there. Again, governments invest a hell of a lot of money in street events around Australia when they do any of those street-based events, simply because they can see more value in bringing that right into the town, you know. And quite like, for instance, Newcastle's got a regional-based status, so they want to bring people to Newcastle. So they'll put a lot of money into doing that, and the whole thing's a party. It's not just a race. So And they'll put bands and everything on. So I think in terms of as a circuit-based event, yeah, we'd be right up there. We'd be right at the pointy end.
Because I have to think, you know, because you're not – that's the thing. You're not a major franchise. You know, no. It's not supercars. It's not that sort of thing. You know, you're a you know, you're one man that's built, you know, your own show from the ground up.
But, you know, a lot of this comes from, apart from our marketing, people come to it last year and they go, man, you got to go to this next year because this. And we're here to entertain. So I think people get entertained and they go – you know, they see cool shit they don't see anywhere else, you know. Like, who else is going to take the plane off on the main straight?
And that is damn cool. Like, having the – because he's – is he Red Bull Air Race or how does he –
Yeah, he's a Red Bull Air Race champion.
Yeah.
And he's because a hell of a good guy.
Oh, mate, that's wild. The fact that – I don't even – like, how the hell do you even get permission for this stuff?
Yeah, that's
– you got bloody power lines going across there. Like,
it's called targeted risk assessments. Hey. And working out how we don't say we can't do it. We say how can we do it, do we have to do it. You know, again, like and Matt said to me, you know, he said, you know, this looks extremely dangerous to you and your guys, but just understand, I won't do anything risky. And I'm an RAAF fighter pilot, and this plane is designed to go straight up and straight down. So you know what can look very risky to the outsider, which is what makes it cool, is actually it's actually probably a lot safer than what you think.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Actually, I've had a memory, and again, you know, you got to thank Red Bull for this. But when you got Mike Webber and his bloody F1 car there, mate, that is a cherished memory.
No, the one last year, you mean?
This was way back. This is back in the dark ages, mate.
I've never had Webber there.
You haven't had Webber there?
I wish I did, but I haven't. I would love to have.
Really?
No, you're thinking of Top Gear Festival.
Oh, stop it. Now I'm getting upset. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I'm giving you props.
They had Daniel as well. And let me tell you, I was green with envy when they did that. But BBC, you know, you can't confuse things that have got Northern Hemisphere marketing budgets and investment budgets. It's it was Top Gear Festival, you're thinking.
Oh, it is Top Gear Festival, and I apologize for that. I'm getting old, mate. My memory gets...
It's okay.
My memory gets cloudy. But, mate, something else I really wanted to talk to you about is you've obviously got support these days from New South Wales State Government.
Yep, we've had that.
Mate, how on earth? But back up and tell me how on earth that even got started.
So the state government is interested in anything that's going to bring – the branch that we're involved in is Destination New South Wales, and they're interested in anything that's going to bring – and they will invest in stuff that will bring people to the state of New South Wales and even to Sydney, you know, from regional areas. So and we tick those boxes probably more than a lot of the other – you know, if you look at a supercars round in Sydney, most of the people from that go to watch that will be fans that are in the Sydney Basin, where for our once a year show, we will have people coming from all over the world. So we tick the boxes, and they are our partner, and they help us in more ways than one, more than just financially. They'll help us with the marketing, and we can get placement down so we can do a press release down in front of the Opera House or the Harbour Bridge and all sorts of really cool stuff that we couldn't do before.
Because I always thought that was amazing when you've managed to get the cars together in front of the harbour.
Yeah.
Mate, they're very special shots.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we might do that again this year. That's been put on hold, obviously, with the COVID thing. We just did something at the track last year. But, yeah, that's something we're looking at again. Yeah, that for sure.
But quintessentially Australian shots, because it's something that I think is amazing, because I've had, you know, the pleasure of being involved in motorsport in a lot of places around the world. And something that blew me away was actually people knew about, you know, Mount Panorama.
Yep.
Was one of the things that people would talk to me about. But, you know, we've now got World Time Attack that is actually getting out there and getting interest from around the world. Are you seeing more interest from other regions as it sort of builds this legacy?
100%. Obviously, the freight's become a bit of a problem, and that's something we're working on moving forward and from this year on. In terms of interest, 100%. In fact, for the past few years, up until 2019, we actually run the week after Bathurst. So a lot of the people would come out, particularly from New Zealand, and they do both. One of the like with everything, there's a good and a bad to it. And one of the bad parts was trying to get officials because they go to Bathurst and then, you know, I don't want to work next weekend or I've got to spend the weekend with my wife.
Oh, they'd be knackered.
Yeah, correct. So, and the other thing, we moved because we wanted to get right away from daylight saving so we can run the night. Also, it's a bit cooler. At the start of October can be hit with, like, we've had 35-degree heat that weekend when I was unpacked. Well, one week packing the cars, it cooled down for the event, but, you know, you run the risk of having a hot weekend and it's no good for time attack cars.
No, that wouldn't be good. And, mate, we've talked a bit about the international, but talk to me about the Australian scene and the local support and what that's looked like as we start to come back again.
Yeah, well, we're sold out. Can I tell you, we're sold out in everything. All the trader areas sold out, every spot of time attack sold out, every spot of drift, every spot of the show, like everything pretty much is to capacity this year. So I think there's a few spots in the car show left. That's about it.
Wow.
So everything. And we got some cool displays this year that I haven't even announced yet, but I'll give you one of them, 60 years of V12 Lamborghini. So we're going to have everything from the Miura there to the Aventador, all curated in a really cool display. And that's just perfect. I've got a heap of stuff I can't tell you about yet because we've got to announce it, but that's the sort of thing that we're doing, you know.
Mate, I'm hanging for those exclusives.
Yeah. So no one knows about that one yet. Well, you got it here first.
Yeah, hey, got it here first. Jeez, mate, I'll have to get this out quick smart.
Yeah.
But because it really has been a hell of an operation, because I've watched it from those earliest days. And in those, like in those first days, like in your super lap days, that was just local blokes. As you said, that was just your mates, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's correct. Yeah. So, well, to be honest with you, we had very good. So just remember, that was really before the days of social media or any of that type of marketing. It was the days of forums and magazines, really. So we partnered in the early days with Fast Force magazine, and we got quite a bit of support from the Eastern Seaboard. Like, it was a semi-national event that people come from Queensland and Victoria. You know, we had half a dozen cars come from each of them, which was pretty good for a first-time effort. But certainly when we went to 2010 and the first world event, where we only had really five cars come from overseas, but it was still, we still got cars from all over Australia then. And then of course, the Drift Australia had fallen over then. So we integrated the Drift into the night section. So we basically had a day-night event then. And we bought – back in those days, that was almost like the pinnacle of what was going on in New Zealand with the drifting. They had Mad Mike and D1NZ was really strong. It was like what I was saying about the pro cars in Japan. You know, it was a really strong feel. I went over there and I was just blown away. You know, like, these guys had energy drink sponsors and you know, all sorts of stuff going on. I'm like, well, we've got to put this together, you know, and try and get some cars here. And as it turned out, I met a guy who's a good mate of mine now, a guy named Doug Irich, that was the marketing manager for ITWM Tech, which was Wins and Tech Deloitte. So he said, yeah, look, you know, we'll get involved. This is something different. We've done drag racing. This, we'll get involved in it. And so I went out to meet with him and I walked into his office and I looked up on the wall and there's this car on the wall. It's got Tech Deloitte sponsorship all down the side of it. And we'd already agreed to bring it to Australia. And I didn't know he'd done this deal with him. So that was the first car we bought. And it's a guy that we just announced yesterday, a guy named Gaz Wider, who's four times D1 champion. So that all that synergy just happened. That was a year that, and then we got Mad Mike, and you know, it was a really big year for us for Drift. And then the following year we brought over Team Orange from Japan. So we did spice the Drift up, and the Drift has been a big part of what we do. And I can remember, I forget what year it was, maybe 2016 or 17, but we still had 10,500 people checked into that venue at 10 o'clock at night. And I can tell you, not all of them are Drift fans, diehard Drift fans. They're there for the show. So I still maintain that there's, you know, there's big merit in putting on that Drift show to the highest level.
Mate, I totally agree with you because, again, I've got a real soft spot for Drift. I was heavily involved in that for a very long time. You know, you go back to, you know, the Rob White and Josh Botcher.
Yep.
Those boys.
Well, just so you know, they'll both be here. There you go.
Oh, get out of town.
Oh, geez, mate.
Oh, geez. Well, this is the best part, mate, because they're all dads now and we're middle-aged weapons rolling these things back out.
You know, Mackie had 110 inquiries to get into the drift show and everyone's, you know, of course everyone wants to come, but we can't fit everyone in. We're very limited on time because of the live broadcast, and we do a television quality live broadcast that, let me tell you, costs mega bucks. And we limited, like, we can't just carry on all night as much as we'd like to. So we're very limited on what we can do, but we've still got, you know, there's quite a few young guns in there as well. I think there's 8 overseas competitors, 2 from Japan, America, New Zealand. So it's pretty cool.
Mate, please tell me there's at least one AU Falcon drift car.
No, there's no AU Falcons. No.
Mate, there's got to be room for plus one if somebody can get a good AU together.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree.
Oh, mate, look, there's always room for a little bit of that stupidity.
Yeah.
And mate, the future of World Time Attack. Over the next 10 years, where do you see this going?
I don't know, but I can tell you this year we've got a major manufacturer who's committed to be with us this year, and they're doing a release of a very special, unique performance vehicle that no one's seen yet will be released at World Time Attack. And I see do I see manufacturers get involved? Certainly at that level, yes. We got the audience that if they want a young audience, well, this is where you're going to find them. So I can see there's more opportunity for that to happen in terms of activation space. I can see a lot more overseas participation coming in, particularly from Europe, where we've got a lot of interest. Japan, yes. America, Canada, yeah. William Moore Young's building a brand new car, super keen to get back. The Audi R8, they basically sent me a note saying, man, we're not dip it out. We're just not going to be there this year. We're spending the year testing this car over in throughout Scandinavia, and then we're coming back and it's game on. So, you know, again, people underestimate the cost and time involved with testing these cars now, you know, and the days of just building it and turning up and trying to win, it just, you're completely delusional, you know, like you're running almost at Le Mans spec, really. You know, I know it's only for one lap, but the vehicles are at that speed and possibly even faster. So to try and get that out of the bag, you know, off the bat, is a big ask. So I think, you know, we're going to see this consolidation of, you know, different builds coming on certain years. You're not going to get everyone all in one year because that's just impossible. But that's what makes it cool, you know. And the evolution of each class progressing, you know, at the pace it has, you know, maybe, you know, it's going to get a little slow, but the inspiration and the amount of participation and the quality of the builds these days, I think we're just going to continue to see that, you know, going in one way, and that's up.
Because it's built real legends as well, and I didn't know this, but I heard the Hammerhead, so which is obviously a legend of World Time Attack.
Yep.
I understand that chassis started its life as a drift car.
Not that one. The other one did. I was actually that happened in a motel car park, drinking a couple of cans of Jim Beam with Murray Coop, myself and Murray. He was over there helping his son, and I was over there helping a young guy named Jake Jones. And he just started to tell me about. So he said, "My son's telling me you're doing this track attack event. Tell me about that." And I said, "Yeah, well, it's just basically, you know, it's basically time attack. So it's, you know, the fastest lap." And he goes, "Yeah, well, I reckon you need aerodynamics, and hang on, get me another drink." You know, so that's how it went. And he said, "So you need aerodynamics, power. I know the guy to do that." And he said, "I've got a young guy over here that I reckon would be the best driver. His name's Earl Bamber." Right. So back in those days, so we went and met Earl, and Earl said he wanted to get into V8 supercars. He come and drove my. So the first driver that Murray's car back then was Earl Bamber. A few years later, Earl Bamber went on to win Le Mans with Porsche twice. You know, so he certainly had an idea, you know, a hand for picking him. And Earl was replaced with Shane Van Gisbergen, who drove for a couple of years, and then And then Shane, when the Red Bull, when he started with Red Bull Racing, I don't think he was allowed to drive any other cars. It was a lot different back then. Yeah. These days you can do whatever, but back in those days, you know, there were it was a very serious thing. And then when he left, Murray's had a raft of people through there, but that car you're looking at now is the second generation of that. The first one was originally a drift chassis, yeah.
Because I ran into Dan Russell out at Roll Racing here in Brisbane, and he told me that one of his original chassis went to Murray. So I don't know if there's any.
That's possible, yeah. Well, he did have a few of them. Like his son, I think his son still got a drift car. It's like an S13. That's what's a car he was racing over in New Zealand, drifting in New Zealand. So, I can't say for sure, but I certainly know that the second one was a shell that he had sitting there to do that with.
And one of the other obviously mad cars is this car, the Button Mouth, the Porsche.
Yeah, yeah.
Mate, that thing is just off its head.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. Yeah.
Where the hell did that even start? Like, where do you even go that this is a good idea?
So that started because they walked up behind under Suzuki's car one year and went, "You're allowed to do this? Wow!" You know, and I think like everything starts with a seed in someone's head, and part of the thing's the game. You know, like Rod doesn't drive that car himself. He wants to, you know, he wants to be the fastest in the world. So he starts out. Although, mind you, originally that car was originally started. He was building an open class car for himself, and he wanted to put GT3 subframes in there. I said, "You can't do that in that class. It doesn't apply, you know." And we had a little bit of a heated phone conversation with me explaining, "Well, I can't just break the rules for you. You know, that's the rules say you can't do that, so we can't do it, you know." He said, "Well, bugger it, I'm going to build a pro car then." So, and that's what you're looking at.
Because it's something else. Like, they've gone so far on absolutely everything.
Yeah, that's for sure, you know. And you know what? It hasn't gone unnoticed. Like, so a mate of mine, well, Eric Sue, you might remember him. He comes out and commentates for us. He actually works for Honda Racing in the US, you know, and he goes, "Dude, you know what? I mentioned World Time Attack to Brandon Hartley." He goes, "Dude, I love that event, you know." So, you know, people are watching it for sure, you know. And for a racing driver, you've got to understand, you know, in most of their life, they go into these races, and it doesn't matter how professional it is, right? They've got someone yelling in their ear, "Righto, back off, you know, to save fuel. Don't blow the tires, do this." In this thing, we just strap you in, pull the harnesses really tight, and turn everything up to 12. You know what I mean? And just say, "Send it." So it's not very often they get an experience like that. So that's something that most of the racing and drivers just go, "Mate, that's just so cool."
Because you keep pulling in, massive drivers, you know, SVG, he's always, you know, having had Tim Slade, like blokes, as you said, that are, you know, superstars in other categories that come in, you know, to drive.
Our media reach now, it doesn't do them any harm either. Like Tim Slade got the drive with the Ferrari GT3 team because they seen him win World Time Attack. So you know, those guys probably are not watching V8 Supercar, you know, so they're probably, you know, there's value in it for an up-and-coming driver to be there, you know.
See, I had no idea of that, mate. This is the thing. Like, I can only – and that's it, mate. I'm just prying open some of the stories here because I just can't fathom the number of things that will have come out of – you know, the number of teams, the number of people, the number of races, the number of things that have been built up over the years, it's bloody wild.
Well, certainly that was part of my thing when I started doing this, and I watched what Ray Box and Colin had done with Jamboree and the drag racing, and, you know, there's an industry underneath us relying on this, you know. So what happens if we don't do it? You know, that's the next thing, you know. I think a lot of the pro categories right through to GT3, that's a closed shop, you know. Those cars are built by factories, you know, like all the GT cars, they're all built by, and TCR and all those things are all built by manufacturers overseas. So the only thing Australia gets out of that is repair bills, you know. You know, the carbon fibre guy might fix a few panels or whatever, but there's no real industry around it where I think what we do, there is certainly a big industry underneath it.
And that's probably something I hadn't thought a lot about, but when I think about, you know, the R&D, the investment, the fabricators, the builders, the aero. Like, it just, it goes on and on, doesn't it?
I think some of these carbon fibre guys are living on a 90-metre yacht or a waterfront at the moment these days. Oh,
mate, they've begun.
Looking at the amount of money they've made. But, you know, look, good on them. At the end of the day, they're doing the work. So, you know, I say that tongue-in-cheek because I know, I think you know, that stuff is so labour-intensive that while it looks like you're making $1 million, you're probably – you know, by the time you finish it, it's probably yeah. But the nuts and bolts of it are is that we're generating revenue for Australians, and that's a fact.
And you touched on it before about your live stream.
Yeah,
you've done this since day dot.
No, I didn't.
Or was it 10, 11, 12? When
no,
did that?
2014. We did it. Was the 14. First year. And you know why? Because I couldn't afford to do it properly. And really? I didn't want to do a half-assed one. So it was like, I'm not going to run around with a guy with a gimbal cam, and we're going to do this properly or we're not going to do it at all. So
because your live stream, mate, that is a sight to behold.
Well, I think that's a big thing that we invest in every year, and it doesn't necessarily make us any money. In fact, I can assure you it doesn't. But it's an important part of what we do, and it's how we present ourselves to the world, and it's what aspires people to come here by watching that, you know, if you want to come in, you know you're going to be represented on our show in the best possible light.
Because I tried to watch Le Mans the other day,
yeah,
and I've got subscriptions to everything, and I've even recently got Foxtel as well to try and bundle it all in.
Yeah.
But the one thing I didn't have was Stan Sport, which was where Le Mans was running,
yeah,
which makes and it makes it very hard. And I understand that these people are doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
And mate, if you ended up on a platform, I would totally understand that. But you have provided a place where people can access it.
Yeah.
Because I know that I've sat home watching the stream before when I've been unable to make it, and it's very special.
Yeah. Well, it's. I think we were one of the first, really, to do a television quality live stream production with no paywall. It's a bit of a risky thing, but I think as soon as you put the paywall in there, well, one of the big reasons in the early days I didn't do that was because it was too unreliable. It was before all the cable, like they got fiber optic cables at the venue now, and I mean, but the internet used to drop out. So in the early days, we had a big problem with having a reliable source to put it out there that could guarantee it. So we were then forced to look at other ways to try and fund it, you know, for sponsorship and advertising and whatever. And I mean, it's a tough gig to do that, but, you know, we just have to suck it up, I think. And it's just a part of what we do. And also it makes the whole, like, you can sit up in the, you can watch it, watch the whole event from anywhere around the track. So as a live production, we just have to do that now. We don't have any choice, you know.
Because I get a lot of value from that, from those sorts of things. Because I must say, even when I'm at supercars, I quite often have, you know, KO on the phone so that I can see what's happening when I'm at the wrong end of the track.
Yeah, yeah, that's true too. And also, it's a bit of a double-edged sword that if you make the live stream too good, no one will come to the event. But we haven't really – look, I get told, oh, my mates aren't coming, they're just going to do a watch party in the garage and drink beer. Well, that's fine, but, you know – it did concern me, but we seem to have enough people coming anyway that it's, you know, there's nothing like experience it live, you know. You can watch, you know, I just spoke to Brett from GCG. He just come back from Le Mans. He said, man, you've got to go there. It's just like nothing else you've ever been to. It's,
have you not been?
No, I've never been, no.
Mate, yeah, that'll blow your mind.
It's on the bucket list. There and Goodwood, that's two things that I want to go to.
Mate, Goodwood, I'm working on. I'm trying to get myself there because I've done Le Mans.
Well, people can't. People always send me clips to Goodwood. Have you seen this? Have you seen that? I'm going, it's not going to come to Australia. You've got to understand that, you know, all the big manufacturers that are over there, they can ship cars, you know, like, oh, yes, all the F1 cars are there. Yeah, but that's because they're all there. They're not going to air freight them to Australia. That's just not going to happen, you know.
Now, here's a fun story. I was chatting to a buddy of mine in the UK, and he's aware of your event.
Yep.
He owns three historic F1 cars. He's got a James Hunt, and he's got he's got toys. And I said to him, I said, oh, I'll have to float this past you. I'll talk to you about it off the air because he's won Monaco Historic seven times in these.
Well, all I'm going to say regarding what you just spoke about is watch this space.
Ooh.
I can't tell you too much more.
Ooh. Oh, mate, you're singing my language, and particularly old F1 cars, because what I love about those bad boys is that they scream.
Yeah, well, like I said, we'll see what happens in the next few weeks. But yeah, it's something. I've got a bit of a passion for all that sort of stuff too. So we'll see what happens. You know.
Mate, all the old jalopies, you know. I know that we love the new fast things, but there's a real soft spot for those.
Well, now, they certainly have got a lot more character.
Now, mate, one of the other things that I think is amazing, because obviously we don't have anything like SEMA here in Australia. I'm sure there's Australian aftermarket and there's a few other things.
Yeah.
But I have certainly found that if you work in and around the industry, coming to your event is one of the best ways to catch up with most of the industry in one place at one time.
Yeah. So when you say that, you're right. And, you know, most of the ECU manufacturers and, well, for example, Motec is hosting one of their conferences up in the room this year. And, Yokohama have got a big corporate event going on. And, we've certainly, you're right about that. And it's somewhere where people, I guess we don't have a SEMA, you're right. And this is probably the closest thing to it. Andy does a good job at Summonats, although they're a little bit different market to us. They're more of the V8 orientated street machiny hot roddy crowd, where we're more the JDM Euro,
performance
with a bit of V8s thrown in,
It certainly does lean that way a bit more. In terms of your traders, like what's the sort of numbers these days in terms of the traders that are coming along?
I wouldn't know, but it's capacity. The thing sold out.
Far out, because it's the entire pit lane, both sides.
Yeah, both sides, around. All of it.
Far out.
And we're going to have the plane mounted front and center as you walk in. So, it's the big thing about that as well is not just the guys involved, but the effort they put into the stands, everyone's trying to upstage each other. So, which makes for the average punter that walks around, they go like, look at that now, look at that, look at this, look at that, So, it's a show within itself, and that can take you half a day to just walk through there,
Oh, I know, and with your car show as well, and I know that that's been run by different people. Who's actually hosting that?
Downshift have done it for the past few years, and they've done a really good job of that. Yeah, so that stylized show. It's pretty good, and I guess from a community engagement thing, we got everything there from the biggest turbo suppliers to the New South Wales Police, and everyone just gets on and works together, and it's all about building a car community, really, and what a better place to do it than that.
Because that's been one of my favourite things whenever I've attended is being able to catch up with that broad network.
Yeah.
Because cars and motorsport as an industry, it's a big place, but it's also a very small place.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I don't have to tell you that.
No, you're right. And particularly Australia's a big place, and everyone's so busy. So I think this is really the one weekend of the year where you can come and let your hair down a little bit. Enjoy yourself and certainly catch up with people, and we see that guys going, hey, we're going to catch up for coffee, come over here, or in the afternoon they go up and sit on the hill and have a beer, there is certainly that camaraderie and the unity within the car community, that's for sure.
And mate, like similar vein to V8s, is there any thoughts going forward about big music acts into the evening as well?
I have. I've got one big thing that sticks in my mind, and that I don't know anything about doing that type of thing. So, I run the risk of wrecking it and doing it a poor job of it. We were luck fortunate that we were able to start Time Attack from a small little thing and grow it into what it is today. Mm-hmm. Once you start throwing something in there like that, if you don't do it right, it'll wreck the whole thing. The other thing is, whilst we've got the drift at night, there's no room for it. You'd have to go to a third day. And I don't, from my experience, the third day is very risky and it doesn't seem to work. People like, particularly in the staters, from the surveys we've done, people like to have an extra day to either go home or walk around Sydney and go and do whatever and, catch up with their mum or dad that lives here and they're from Queensland and then go home,
The Friday Saturday was certainly it seemed unusual early on.
Yeah.
Um, and wasn't something that I was familiar with, but it has ended up making a lot of sense.
Yeah, and the big thing with the Friday is that's really the industry day. So if you got guys, you know, there's a few reasons for that. But first of all, from the traders' position, to employ people on the Sunday is very expensive. We've found that Sunday doesn't really work like Saturday. Saturday's the big day. So we kind of like the format that we've run, you know, of Friday, Saturday and Thursday practice. And this year's the first time we're running Thursday as a ticketed event. We're only going to allow 500 people in.
How good.
Yeah, it's a little bit tricky because we've got a OH&S thing with – they can't get into the pit area because that's a bumping area. But they can walk around. They can go up on the top of the thing and they can go and sit in the grandstand or whatever. And we're making it cheap. So, you know, if you want a cheap day, come on the Thursday.
Because I've come early before. And actually there's been years where I've had a wonderful time, you know, kicking around, just taking some photos in the early days because there's nobody there.
That's right, yeah.
And you can sort of cruise around and there's not.
Well, like you said, there was nobody there, and that's grown into more and more and more and more to the point that we have to manage it with security and so on, which means then we have to charge for it, you know. But yeah, again, we've made it affordable. It's the cheapest day to come. If you just want to come and have a look, that's you know, you're not going to experience the whole show, but you can see a few of the cars going around and the guys drift practice at night and so on and so forth.
That's bloody brilliant because Sydney Motorsport Park is also an exceptional venue.
Yeah, it certainly is. For us, it ticks every box, you know, in terms of we've learnt that venue back the front now, so it's a great venue for us, yeah.
Because when you started, obviously, we had, you know, Queensland Raceway back in the olden days where it was agricultural at best. Yep.
He's obviously done a good job of fixing that up, I've got to tell you.
Bloody hell. I was out there a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
I'm no longer embarrassed.
Yeah, he doesn't mess around that man. When he gets his fingers into something, he doesn't mess about. Oh,
not only does he not mess about, he has exceeded expectations at a speed that I can't fathom. But when we would come as Queenslanders, you know, when we were operating out of a tin shed down to Sydney Motorsport Park, the envy that we had that, you know, because you've got like the big indoor bar areas and the corporate setups and nice garages.
Yep.
And then stands undercover.
Well, you got to remember, he's a motorsport nut, and this is his own, this is his baby now. So you're going to get some of the probably the decisions made as smart as he is as a businessman. There'll probably be some emotional decisions there too, which you can't beat that. When in terms of quality of things, you can't beat that. You know, when you got passion involved, that's what things really become cool.
And that's what the whole operation needs because, again, that's what you bring to this because I can't imagine those early days. I can't imagine that was was it financially viable out of the gates or did it sort of hurt pretty bad?
Look, to the wrong guy, it would never be financially viable, you know, because of the amount of effort required. But, look, you can have your up years and down years, but, you know, if you think you're going to get rich out of doing this, you're in the wrong game, you know. But there's a lot of people that are very rich that would wish they could do what I'm doing, I can tell you, because you're living the dream, really. You know, you're doing – it's like, can we get this car in? Let's bring it, man. Let's do it, you know. So that's the sort of shit that those guys wish they could do, some of them, you know. We're doing it. So there's a for and against, you know, that it's a balancing act. I've got Inga over here to keep me in check that make sure we don't, you know, when she hears the word air freighter, her ears prick.
No. You wait until she walks out, till she has a lunch break. But, and then you're like, righto, boys.
But, you know, you can't put a price on the enjoyment you bring to people, you know. And I think Tony Quinn's probably got a bit of that in him too, you know.
Oh, totally, mate. It's shenanigans out there now. They've even got a bar. We're catching up to Sydney Motorsport Park. Yeah. I had a drink up at the bar at Roll Racing.
Unbelievable.
You go. Whereas I'd only enjoyed that at, you know, finer southern venues.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, I am super grateful that you've given me some time. I don't want to hold on to you too long.
No, mate, my pleasure.
But if you want to give us a rundown, so talk me through. This is the year 2023.
Yeah.
Mate, talk me through World Time Attack 2023. What are the dates? What do people need to know? Where do they need to go?
1st and 2nd of September. Sydney Motorsport Park. Biggest show ever. Be there.
Well, that's pretty bloody easy. And, yeah. Mate, if people want to follow World Time Attack.
WorldTimeAttack.com.
And mate, what about you? Can they follow you around the internet?
You can follow me and laugh at all my crazy antics. I'm Mr. World Time Attack on Instagram.
Ian, you're a bloody legend. Mate, thanks for giving me an hour of your time. I'm really grateful for you to come on and chat about, you know, what is a very special event to me and to our
Are you going to come down this year?
Mate, try and stop me.
Okay, awesome. Well, you shout out and I'll hook you up and I'll give you a power round, eh?
Mate, you're a bloody legend. Yeah, we'll catch up and we'll do part two.
Good on you. Awesome, Scott. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ian, mate. Cheers, we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
My pleasure. Cheers. Bye. All good?